Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. You're asking, we're all asking, where's all the water gone? Long time not raining. I'm not trying to make up a song, but we seriously, we do have a severe water shortage. How severe is it? Is it something that we're going to have to live with forever? What kinds of solutions are before us? Who is doing the long-term planning with respect to our water supply for the future? What does it mean that we're going to have to pay a lot more? And who can we ask these questions to? Well, I'm going to ask two people who, if anybody knows the answers to some of these questions, these guys will. One is Ed Kerwin, who's the executive director of OWASA, and Randy Kabrick, who's the chair of the OWASA's board of directors. And they've agreed to come in and share with us some of their ideas about these questions that all of us have. Randy, first of all, thanks for this idea, and thanks for bringing Ed on board. I'm excited about talking. What do you say when people grab you on the street? Is I guess they're grabbing you on the street. You're probably having more conversations than you're used to. What do you say?
Well, I've had several people, including Bob Dunham at University Presbyterian Church, ask me, why would you be chair of OWASA at such a terrible time of drought?
Why'd you pick this time?
And my response was, I didn't pick the time or the drought. But I respond that, by saying that OWASA is really doing all we can do to manage our precious water supply during this time of drought.
You didn't say, did you, to Bob, it's not like Jonah and the whale, it's not that God's punishing OWASA for having you as the director, that there's no signal there.
I did not make any biblical references when talking about the drought and Bob.
Well, in one sense, this is the reason why we got great leaders, why we seek out community leadership to deal with not the easy parts, but with the hard challenges. And is it a hard job for you during this time? Is it just a public relations idea? Or have you got the magic answers?
No, I do not have the magic answers, DG. I think it has been very hard on Ed and his staff, because I think they are the focal point for the community to go to with questions concerning our new inverted block structure that we implemented earlier this year, questions about water and water use. I think Ed's organization takes the brunt. I have been in dialogue with the two mayors, of course, talking about how important water management is during the drought. They're hearing from their constituency that, hey, we want OWASA to really do their best here.
Which means what?
Which means, make sure that we have enough water.
Well, Ed, we're having to field these calls. What are the questions people are asking, and what are the answers you're giving to them?
Do we have enough water? What is your emergency plans? Are we okay? You know, when Randy earlier said, OWASA is doing all that we can, we are doing quite a bit, and we look forward to sharing some of that with you and your listeners for the next half hour or so. But who is OWASA? OWASA is the 80,000 people that use our water every day, whether they're here during working hours, whether they live here, whether they're a student. You know, it's everybody in our service area, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, that turns a tap is using our services. So when we say OWASA is doing all that we can, you know, there are things as an institution and as an organization we're doing. But at the end of the day,
it's me.
We count on every consumer to use the resource wisely, because the drought really reminds us that it is limited. It's not endless. And, you know, one of our former board members, Peter Gordon, used to say the best we can hope for is to be taken for granted. And there's a lot of truth to that. When you turn the spigot or flush the toilet, that what you expect that happens, happens. And it does.
Well, let me ask you this. I had a guest on a few weeks ago who said the water shortage is no problem. The economy, the economic model takes care of it. It's a price demand situation. There's plenty of water, and if you price it right, there won't be a shortage. Is that didn't make sense to me. Does that make sense to you?
Well, we learned a lot from the last bad drought, 2001-2002. And the OWASA Board of Directors were very proactive, and one of a number of things they supported was implementing a conservation rate structure for our water. And we went to a seasonal rate structure in 2002, where May through September, the cost of water is much more expensive than it is during what we would call the non-summer. Since we don't have winter here, we have non-summer. And that in itself, you know, sent a price signal to customers. If you're going to use a lot of water in the summer for irrigation, you're going to pay more for it. And the WASA board this spring decided to send even a stronger price signal to residential customers. Now, Randy mentioned we implemented an increasing block rate structure. So the more a customer uses now, a residential customer, the more that water will cost them per unit volume. And again, it's sending a stronger price signal to customers that if you're going to use water for more discretionary purposes like irrigation, it's going to cost more.
And so it's interesting. A long time ago, I was sort of in the rate regulating business, and it's what you all have done is so counterintuitive to the models that we were using, and that was that in supplying water, the efficiencies go to the large water users who will support the kinds of systems that are needed for the water system, and so that you give the large user a break. It costs less to supply somebody who uses a lot. And that was the model, I guess, that was probably that we grew up with, but it's mm-hmm. it's different now.
I think the paradigm shift is that we're to a point where water is a limited resource, especially where we are geographically. We're at the headwaters. We have a limited amount of water that can be used in any situation, and we have historically we have sold that water at not the true cost of service. And so people.
What does that mean? What do you mean? Not
well, the true cost of service, we basically were not doing the things we needed to do to take care of an infrastructure that is in the hundreds of years old. The water
so
distribution.
You're just charging what it was costing you today rather than preparing for growth and for the repair of the system, the breakdown.
Right,
of
no
the
planning.
System.
So I think that that's the difference. I mean, I think that we're finally actually realizing that it's water is more than just a commodity.
What is different, Randy, in the model that I suggested earlier between water and, let's just say, gasoline? During the same time that we've had a water shortage, we've experienced what could be described as a shortage of oil or shortage of gasoline. And the way that it's sorted out is that price of gasoline has gone up and people have adjusted their usage. So that there's just enough to go around at a very high price. If there is not enough to go around, we'll raise the price again and decrease the demand. We don't do that with water, though. We just try to give everybody who needs water it at a reasonable rate, and then to protect the supply, we do some price tricks.
Well, it's similar, the inverted block structure. I mean, I think that the way that we structured the new rate structure is that the people on the lowest rung of the economic ladder had access to what we think is a fair amount of water in the first block, 0 to 2,000 right. gallons, priced fairly at the cost of service. But then we said, you know what? Above that, the user should pay more because it is a precious resource, and it's a limited resource. And so the more you use, the more you should have to pay in terms of water.
And it does add cost to the utility and all customers because, you know, those customers that choose to use a lot of water in the summer outdoors means we have to build larger plants, larger pipes, larger storage tanks, and it does add costs to all of our customers. So there's also, a strong sense of fairness that, you know, customers that place high peak demands on our system should pay more for the services they receive than from customers that don't vary their summer usage from their winter usage.
So
very
going
much.
Back to my analogy, maybe this is just this doesn't get to our emergency situation, but that the user who consistently uses a large amount of water for good purposes, for some business or for, and that it is summertime use and wintertime use all along, then capacity, that person pays for the capacity. What is disruptive is for somebody to call on the system to provide them for a lot of water in a few months. And it at times, so you got to have the capacity. And then you come into another time, and that's unused capacity that you got to pay for somehow. Is that sort of your rationale for the high prices for large users?
Well, you know, I think it gets back to what Randy said earlier, you know, we're pricing the commodity to reflect the true value of that commodity and the cost to provide those services. So, in fact, I've had inquiries from all over the state about our rate structure, wanting to know more about it, how successful it's been. I think it's extremely important for our customers to know that average residential usage has declined 10 to 15% since the last drought. And I think a part of that certainly is our pricing structure. Well, it costs more, and people are choosing to use less and to use it more wisely. And that's just key to our future as well, to practice greater conservation.
We're talking to Ed Kerwin, Executive Director of OWASA, and to Randy Kabrick, the Chair of OWASA's Board, about the water crisis. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about water with Ed Kerwin, Executive Director of OWASA, and Randy Kabrick, Chair of OWASA's Board. If you're worried about whether or not you're going to have enough water to drink or to provide a little bit of water for your plants, to wash your car, these guys are the guys to answer. We were talking about rates. I'm ready to move on, but Ed, I think you think maybe we ought to talk just a minute more about the rates.
In June, when the board approved moving to this increasing block rate structure, inverted block rate structure, the board also approved that if we were in a time of shortage, a declared water shortage, there would be additional surcharges placed on those high blocks of consumption, and which sends an even stronger price signal during times of declared shortages, such as we are in now. We're in a declared shortage, water shortage, stage two, which essentially means people, you know, can't use spray irrigation systems any longer. But I've had inquiries from my peers throughout this region, as well as the state, wanting to know more about our pricing structure. You know, I think for a residential customer that uses 15,000 gallons a month right now, even though that'd be really hard to do if they're following the rules about irrigation, you know, our water is probably the most expensive in the state. And I've been told by a number of my peers I should be proud of that fact and proud that, you know, we work for a board of directors that's progressive in their thinking to price the commodity to what it's worth.
Are you getting any complaints from your customers?
You know, by and large, folks are understanding and supportive.
The message is simply, just to get around the kind of rate structure, is if you use a modest amount of water, you're going to be getting a bargain on your water. But if you use water to irrigate a lot for whatever purpose, it goes beyond what you need for normal household use, you're going to find yourself paying a lot more, and even a lot more than that, in times of real water shortage. So, I mean, that's just a fair statement of the rationale? And if you want to learn more about it, you can go to OWASA's website and get the precise details of how the water rates are set.
Right.
Well, I think more than how much, you know, people in Chapel Hill, a lot of them have got a lot of money, you know, water is still cheap even when it's more expensive than any part of the state. What they're worried about is, are we running? I mean, you know, this is a crisis. Are we running out? Is there a chance that we'll run out of water, given what you all see in the future?
Well,
short term first, and then long term.
No, well, short term we have about 215 days of water supply currently on hand at our current daily usage rate. Long term. We'd have to have some pretty catastrophic weather, drought in terms of no rain for extended periods of time. I tell you what keeps me up at night is wondering whether we're actually making the weather pattern shift. There are states in the West that have been in extended drought, and now the water resource managers in that state are saying this is the permanent state of rainfall, and we need to plan accordingly. So what keeps me awake is, what if we don't get 46 inches of rain a year anymore?
What if there's a real dramatic and permanent shift in terms of the weather? So that, no, we don't want to live in a desert, but we're in a dry area.
A drier area. And so that calls for really acting regionally, not just as a single entity, because I think that one of the pieces that's real missing in the state is kind of overall water resource planning. And that's one of OWASA's initiatives going forward, and what kind of the next steps are. How do we think about putting together the regional resources in the Cape Fear River Basin that that can share and wheel water when in times of need? And that planning has not happened.
Well, let me push you, Randy, and Ed as well, on terms of the short term situation. Why is it that we are not worried? What has OWASA done, and what has it done in cooperation with other regional cooperation? What has it done to assure that these 200 and some odd days are going to be enough to serve us? How did we get to 200 and some days? And it used to be when we'd have a drought like this that we would be out of water.
Well, I mentioned that we went to a conservation pricing structure, and that certainly was part of improving demand. We also went to year-round conservation measures, drought or no drought. In 2003, at the OWASA Board's encouragement, the towns of Chapel Hill, Carrboro, and Orange County all adopted new year-round conservation measures, which limited outdoor irrigation to just a few days a week and only at night. And that certainly was part of changing the conservation ethic in our service area. We also implemented a process to recycle processed water at a water treatment plant. This was clean water that was used to wash filters that we use at the plant as part of treating the water and making it potable. That water used to be released. Now it's recycled, and that saves 6, 7, 8% of our supply in our lakes.
What does recycling mean? You just put it back into our water?
Yeah, that was recycling,
clean water.
Clean water from Cane Creek and University Lake, our two primary reservoirs. We also, with our partner at the university, committed to build a permanent recycling program. Now, this time it's on the dirty water inside of our business at our Mason Farm wastewater treatment plant.
The water that would be dumped back into a stream.
Right. We discharged
for somebody else to drink.
We discharged to Morgan Creek, and it ends up in Jordan Lake. In fact, we just invested $50 million worth of improvements at our Mason Farm wastewater treatment plant. But that treated water, which we call effluent, is so clean now, all of it, that it can be safely reused and recycled. And the university...
For
non-drinking purposes. The university is investing their money, $10 to $12 million of their money, to pay for OWASA to install and operate a reclaimed water system that will take a portion of this highly treated wastewater from the Mason Farm plant, pump it to campus, where they will use it in their chiller plants instead of drinking water. And the system will be online in 2009. Hopefully, we're still not talking about the current drought in 2009. But this is an important part of our future, using this reclaimed water instead of potable water.
Well, we have scholars on the Carolina campus who say we ought to be doing more in reclaimed water. And is there a possibility to do more for consumers in the way of reclaimed water? For instance, can I get some recycled water to water my plants when I can't afford the OWASA high-priced water that goes above my ordinary usage?
Well, the main pipeline and infrastructure being installed from our treatment plant to campus, we are oversizing some of those main feeder lines, anticipating and keeping open the possibility of other uses in the future, certainly on campus. It could be used for irrigation, Keenan. Bosham or other, green areas, rather than using groundwater or no irrigation at all, we could safely use reclaimed water. I know at the new Carolina North development, we're looking at a dual distribution system where there's separate pipes to deliver non-potable water for things like flushing toilets and irrigation, and a different set of pipes for your drinking water.
And along those lines, some of us got in the business of informal recycling of water from our own systems and found out that was illegal. That is, that if we wanted to use bath water or dishwater or water from washing machines and put that on the ground, that kind of recycling wasn't encouraged. In fact, might be illegal. And what's Owasso's perspective on that?
Well, we don't have jurisdiction over the use of gray water, so that's the honest and short answer.
What do you think about it, though?
We have been encouraging and sponsoring some workshops of build your own rain barrels. And, you know, one day it will rain again. And Paula Thomas, our sustainability administrator, told me this morning that we set up a workshop for 30 participants. It filled up immediately, and now she's added two more classes. So we have almost 100 people in the next 2 weeks going to Owasso-sponsored workshops about building your own rain barrel.
And
capturing, you know, cold water in the shower. It's still clean. You're capturing it, waiting for it to warm up. I mean, that water hasn't been used. I mean, I think that's perfectly safe then to haul outside and use it either outside or inside for irrigation and such purposes. But as far as the use of gray water, yes, understandably, there are some cautions about that.
Well, is that really a reasonable problem? I mean, if it comes out of, you know, isn't this the best kind of gray water you could get? What are the real risks? I know this is not your responsibility, but I'm...
It's a public health.
Yeah, it's a public health concern, but why?
Well, because we don't know where the gray water's coming from. I mean, what if they were scalping water off their septic system? So in other words, they've got a little floating pump in their septic tank that just takes the water and lets the solid settle. That's a public health risk.
But that's not what we're talking about.
But I think that the state views gray water as kind of any water that has gone through a process, whether it's through your dishwasher, washing machine, your bathtub.
Yeah, and you guys are not going to take on the state.
Well, but I think that we have as one of our initiatives is to work with the town to work on ordinances that allows for the use of gray water.
What's your position would be? Send us your gray water. We'll process it and send it back to you. Don't try to use it yourself.
Well, you know, for example, the innovation building that they've proposed for Carolina North is the first building. There's no reason that building can't have a water reuse system in the basement. They do it in Japan. They do it in parts of the West where you actually will scalp off, take off the gray water and then treat it right there on site and put it right back in for use in the toilets.
So that you could imagine, at least for an office building and maybe for some really innovative individual.
Well, maybe every new subdivision is a dual system where has reused water and potable water separate lines.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at is that you might get to the point where you'd have to say it's public health risk right now, but if you'll treat it, just like if you get a rainwater, put it in your cistern and use it later on, if you will treat your own gray water from your shower or from your like in this building in the Carolina North, maybe we could do that.
We could convert our entire distribution customers over to a dual system if money was no object, where we give them recycled water for non-potable uses and potable water for potable uses.
And is that on your agenda, or is that just too
expensive? It's on the agenda for Carolina North. Dan Okin at UNC has been a proponent of this for years.
Dan Okin, just since you brought him up, Dan Okin pushes and argues that in Florida there are very successful dual-use systems that cover the whole community. Takes care of a whole bunch of problems.
Right.
Why aren't we doing that?
You know, it's very expensive in a developed area. It's easier in a new area to look at that doesn't mean we shouldn't be focusing on conservation and demand management. You know, again, who is Owasso? It's 80,000 people that use our water.
So we
need all 80,000 to use it wisely, right? But it is more cost effective and feasible in new development, like Randy explained. And I know the university is very seriously looking at these things.
Excuse me for just, I'm trying to put public policy concerns on you all that you all know about, but that you can't take care of. But it wouldn't be unreasonable if somebody wants to drive this point home is to go to the Chapel Hill and Carborough subdivision regulations or building regulations and to say that anybody who builds a new development in Chapel Hill Carborough now, in addition to all the other things, has to go to dual use. I mean, that would be, and then Owosso would cooperate with that.
We certainly would.
And we've had a working group with our staff and staff from both towns and the counties looking at a number of things, sustainable landscape ordinances, requiring a new development, ultra-low flow fixtures in the homes or businesses. And so this is a work in progress. We have, Randy, a 20-30-page document that the Owosso Board authorized us to share in draft form. And we'll be working in partnerships with the local governments and I think being a little smarter about our growth, a lot more sustainable about our growth in the future with respect to water resources.
We're talking about water, the water crisis, and the things that we have to think about when the immediate crisis is over. We're talking to Ed Kerwin, who's the executive director of Owosso, and also to Randy Kabrick, who's the chair of Owosso's board, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. I'm talking to Randy Kabrick, who is the chair of the Owosso Board, and with its executive director, Ed Kerwin. And Ed, as we took the break, you said, hey, DG, we got to talk about the future, and that's where I want to go to. So we've talked about the crisis, and you all have given us some comfort, at least in the immediate term, that due to the conservation measures that you forced on us. As you point out, we force it on ourselves because you represent us, but that we're in a pretty good position to deal with this one drought. But now, tell us about the future and what you all are worried about and how you're dealing with those worries.
Well, we do have long-range plans. We've looked at 30 years. We've looked at 50 years. And the most important future supply for us will be our expanded Stone Quarry Reservoir. In addition to Cane Creek Reservoir and University Lake, we have a smaller quarry reservoir. And it sits adjacent to property that we own that's currently being mined by a private company. That mining will cease in the year 2030, and soon thereafter, it will be essentially a large storage tank, which we think, when it's done, will hold 3 billion gallons, which is the same capacity that Cane Creek holds when it's full. And it represents an important future supply for us, but that's not until the 2030s. And while we all hope to be going strong in the 2030s, you know, we have a lot of work to do in the meantime. And conservation demand management is going to be important. Our reclaimed water system with the university and perhaps others will be important. But, you know, Randy talked about, you know, the climate changes and the probability that we will be experiencing more severe droughts and more floods. And while on average we may get as much rain, we can expect, I think, more drought. So what level of drought assurance does our community expect from us? And so I think it's going to be really important that as a community and as a region, we cooperate more.
What are your alternatives? Let me just ask the question this or make a statement. You talked about the importance of regional cooperation and of dealing with, on a partnership basis, with the possibility that we would experience weather conditions that would be even much more severe and much more long-term than we have so far. But if we've got the shortages that everybody else have, and the water drying up, is there a place we can go?
I want to take the first shot at that, and then, Randy, please chime in after me. But we have an allocation in Jordan Lake, what's called a Level 2 allocation, which is a future allocation, up to 5 million gallons
we could go after tomorrow.
And the question is just laying the pipes and getting the pump.
Well, there's many ways to get at that water.
Right. But that's the key thing. We have an allocation. It is our insurance policy. The Owosso Board has a stated goal that our objective is to maximize our local resources and not depend outside of Orange County for our water. But nevertheless, you know, we do have a future allocation in Jordan Lake.
And good news, is the allocation big enough to take care of all of your
in addition to our current resources, absolutely.
But your current resources, you're planning about what happens if those dry up.
But as Randy said, we currently don't have the infrastructure to access Jordan Lake water. And for Owosso on our own, to build, you know, 20 miles of pipeline and multiple pump stations to get the water from Jordan Lake to our water treatment plant in Carrboro might cost $40, $50 million, an enormous amount of water. Durham has an allocation in Jordan Lake, but the infrastructure is lacking. Chatham County needs more infrastructure. So as a region, you know, we really need to wrestle with how, as a region, can we access the Jordan Lake water supply pool, which is currently full.
And only it half
is,
allocated.
Today, it is full, and yes, and less than half of it's allocated.
But that's the good news.
Right, and we recognize there's issues of growth, our neighbor's growth, and, you know, we shouldn't do planning for somebody else who hasn't planned. So I know this is really rich with issues for our leaders to wrestle with, but it is really important as a region that we come together and determine how, as a larger area, we will grow.
Well, why isn't this happening? Aren't you all responsible for doing this?
No, I think there are just different political environments in the various stakeholders in the Jordan Lake watershed. And I think that, for example, Chapel Hill has been a pretty controlled growth environment compared to western Wake County. And so I think that we've got to get our arms around kind of a future. What does the future look like for the Cape Fear watershed? Because we're not talking about interbasin transfer here. We're talking about how we manage the water in our little headwaters right here in Chapel Hill and part of Wake County and part of Chatham County, part of Durham County. So I think that we need to do some planning so that we can share water, you know, from our various resources in times of need.
Well, let me just push you all on this because you emphasized the need for cooperative regional planning and looking at it the way you've described it to me, we have an important interest in this. And why haven't we called the conference?
Well, I think the Triangle J Council of Governments have been working on this issue for at least two decades without any much progress.
More recently and locally, Orange County and Chatham County commissioners have agreed to talk about items of mutual interest. Water has been on that agenda their last two meetings, and it's also included mayors and mayor pro tems from Chapel Hill, Carrboro. I think the town of Pittsboro was also there, Hillsboro. And so there are dialogues going on now about water and transportation and parks.
All right, well,
we're in a drought now, so if this isn't the wake-up call that we all need that puts the importance on this situation and carries it through to some successful outcome for everyone,
let me just push you guys because you said this is one of the most important things, and then you said somebody else is talking. Are you all comfortable with the level that you see coming about of regional cooperation on a timetable that is reasonable to take care of the concerns that you have for the importance of regional cooperation?
I think that regional cooperation amongst water utilities that are managed in different ways. AWASA is managed independent from the elected officials. They appoint us as board members, but they don't manage the water utility. Other stakeholders in this watershed are different. And I think it's going to be really, really hard. I mean, I think technically all of us that are in this business agree what needs to be done.
I'm just going to have to declare that, although you won't say it, the answer is no, that we don't have enough going on and regional planning as we ought to have,
right,
given. And you didn't say that, and you don't have to nod your
head. I would agree with that.
And we're talking, or I've got the privilege of talking to Ed Kerwin, Executive Director of AWASA, and Randy Kabrick, who's the Board Chair of AWASA, about the water crisis and the kinds of concerns that are highlighted as a result of the crisis. And we'll all be back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Have you run out of water yet? Are you experiencing water crisis? Are you worried about running out of water? Well, the folks who are in charge of Owosso are worried about it, and they've taken specific, definite steps, both in the short term and the long term, in response to the current crisis and to possible other challenges that we'll be facing in the future, and they're describing them to us now. Randy Kabrick is the board chair of Owosso, and Ed Kerwin is the executive director. Ned, I interrupted you all as on the regionalism issue, but there are other things that you've got in. You've talked about the turning a quarry into a big cistern to store a lot of water. What else? And you've talked about the possibility of laying expensive pipe to Jordan Lake to take care of a good resource there. What are some of the other, and we've also talked about the use of recycled water that will be increasing in the future. What else are you doing to minimize the chances that we'll run out of water in the future?
Again, the first thing that comes to mind is back to you and the 79,999 other customers, and that is, you know, each and every day using water wisely. The per capita use in the United States of water is higher than any other country, period. So, and of course, that includes agriculture and industrial uses. But what does that tell us? You know, as a country, as well as the smaller service area. And at the end of the day, it is how each and every person that uses our water, are they using it wisely? Are we flushing toilets more than we need to? Are we running a washing machines, dishwashers with full loads? Are we letting the water run when we brush our teeth? I mean, these are things people know about. It's common sense. It's intuitive. But how well is it practiced?
Well, one of the things I wonder about when you all you know, lecture me about the kinds of things I ought to be doing and brushing my teeth and not running the water is which of these kinds of things are symbolic and which are actually big users of water overall?
They're all big users of water because it's all cumulative.
Yeah, I know it, but I mean, if I leave the water on at a modest pace while I brush my teeth, is that really a big problem?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Collectively,
I think that it's important as we move forward in the 21st century towards a sustainable society to view one of our most precious resources as something to be conserved for future generations. And I think that saving every drop of water you can is so important. And I think that we've pushed the environment pretty hard here. We pushed it hard enough that we're seeing a real sea change in global weather patterns that are impacting us here locally. So I believe that everything that we can do here in this community, we need to do.
What are the okay, we won't argue about that, but if you had to pick, what are the biggest thieves of unnecessary water use that if you could attack them? You know, the big, not the little, and I still argue that maybe my toothbrush is maybe not the biggest, but maybe it is. Is that the biggest one? Is that where you would really put the emphasis? Or are there other things where you say is low-hanging fruit that if we could just take care of them?
Well, outdoors, it's the irrigation.
So if we could persuade everybody to go to a natural garden that didn't depend on irrigated water, that would be the biggest thing that would improve, you think, the water, the assurance that we would have enough water for the other things.
Yes. I mean, for outdoor water use, I mean, yes, it's irrigation. Or, you know, how about more efficient and effective ways to use that irrigation, drip irrigation, you know, soaker hoses. We certainly value our green community and the quality of life it provides, but we think there are very sustainable ways to do that and use
two positions. If you could really impose it, you would say let's figure out a way to have lawns that work without having any irrigation,
right?
Or with reclaimed water.
And then secondly, right. That would work with a modest,
right? And more people, you know, this drought, I think, sees a brown lawn in August is something you can be proud
of. It's a badge of
that. Exactly. And just like my dirty car I'm driving right now, yeah. I hate dirty cars, and I have an enormously dirty car now.
And that
communicates the, you know, the seriousness.
Well, let me ask you this.
Seriousness.
We've come to an end, and you all have been great about sharing. There are all kinds of things we ought to be talking about as well. What about wells? care whether or not people go into the groundwater or go down into the aquifer and get well water to do irrigation or for other purposes. Is there any worry about that?
I think wells are one of the big problems we have in the state. Only in the coastal plain area is consumptive use regulated for groundwater. And they are withdrawing water from the Castlehaine Aquifer that's 5,000 years old. And that's not sustainable. And we got people here that all they have to do is get a permit from the county and pump as much water as they want.
So it's a worry that maybe we'll talk about another time.
Right.
I wish we could talk about it now.
Thanks, DG, for having us.
Thanks so much. We thank Ed Kerwin, the executive director of OWASA, Randy Kabrick, its board chair, for helping us understand better the water crisis. Thanks for what you guys are doing. I feel better about drinking my one glass of water a day, or eight glasses of water a day, and I feel terrible now if I leave the water on when I brush my teeth.
Thanks for having us,
TG. You guys take care.
So long.
Thanks to all y'all for listening. We'll be back same time tomorrow.